Hi, this is Danielle from The Jealous Curator, and this is episode 111 of Art for Your Ear. And you know what's coming next. Yep, this episode is sponsored by Saatchi Art, the world's largest curated online gallery offering original art by independent artists from around the world. You can visit them at saatchiart.com. Today I am talking to an artist who so many of you have emailed me about, asking if I could please have her on the podcast. Yes, I can. Lindsay Arnold draws and paints all sorts of things, but it's her Tedium series, featuring delicate and worn doilies, that speaks to me. I have to read you her artist statement, and you are going to see what I mean. Okay, here we go. In my grandmother's time, the doily was required for protecting surfaces, concealing imperfections, ornamenting surroundings, and measuring status. Today, doilies are found in abundance at thrift shops, auctions, and forgotten linen closets. Hours of female labor are represented in these worn, stained, and unfashionable objects. The imperfections, which have rendered the doilies unusable for their original purpose, inspire narratives which are further explored through the interactions with the objects such as scissors, pins, and utensils. The doilies are stretched, torn, and misshapen, such as we are by marriage, illness, motherhood, and more. Tedium is a way to honor the difficult experiences which leave us worn, acknowledge thankless, repetitive labor, and reveal a part of the anonymous doily maker's story. See why I had to read that? So amazing. Add to that her insane painting skills, and well, you've got yourself something very, very powerful and special. All right, now we need to ask Lindsay all of the other ins and outs. Calling super small town Saskatchewan. Hi, Lindsay.
Hello.
It's so good to actually talk to you.
Well, this is a real treat for me. I don't get to talk to a lot of strangers way out here in the middle of nowhere. So this is fun.
All you have to do is log on to Skype, just randomly, you know, make contacts out there. I know. So where are you exactly?
I am in North Portal, which is southeast Saskatchewan. And North Portal is right on the U.S.-Canadian border.
Okay.
Like I'm two blocks from the U.S. border where my house is.
Oh my gosh. So yeah. What are you above? Like what state?
North Dakota.
North Dakota. Okay. And so how many people live there?
There's 115 in North Portal. And then we have a sister community like right on the other side of the border, Portal, North Dakota. And they have about the same population. So we have like, it's two communities, two different countries, but we're kind of connected like one.
And then wow.
We have a big line through the middle of it.
Oh, that's so do you go back and forth easily or?
Yeah, I was just over there in Portal yesterday for a pancake breakfast. So yeah, we share services. Like we share a fire department and a golf course, which is an international golf course. It's not a fancy golf course, but it's cool because the ninth hole, you tee off in Canada and your ball lands in the U.S.
What?
Yeah.
Okay, don't let Trump find out about this because he'll probably shut that all down.
We've been doing this stuff way longer than Trump's been around, so no, we're good.
That's so warm and cozy and amazing. Like, there's the perfect example of two nations standing side by side.
Yeah, it's a big deal.
Yeah, it is. Okay, let's talk about your art.
Okay.
So, I don't even know how I found you or when. I wrote about you a couple years ago the first time, I think.
Yeah, it was in like 20, I want to say April of 2016.
Oh, really? That's it?
Wasn't that long ago.
Oh.
But then you did again in December of 2016.
Oh, see, I couldn't control myself. Once I found you, I was like, oh my God. So, I do a great big post on my site that'll go with this podcast so everybody can go and see. But your doilies, your painted doilies from it's Tedium, right?
Mm-hmm.
Tedium series. Well, I thought they were photographs when I first saw them. And I was like, oh, that's cool. Photographs of doilies. That's cool. And then I was like, hold the phone. Those are paintings. Hence having to write about them twice and then have you on the podcast. So we're going to get back to the craziness of painting those, but you know the drill, you listen to the podcast. I want to talk about you being a kid. And so was there a lot of craft kind of things in your world when you were a kid?
Well, I was definitely, you know, the kid that could draw well in school.
Yeah.
So, and both of my parents are creative people. My mom's a really good drawer. Plus, she's a quilter, and she can sew anything. I had the best Halloween costumes growing up.
Like, well, that's in the not so speedy speed round. Wow, that's literally perfect. Okay, keep going.
And so drawing and doing things with your hands was just part of my growing up.
Yeah.
And plus I lived in a town of, like, I grew up in North Portal. So you have to make your own fun.
Yeah.
You know, there's not a lot of stuff to do here. So I wasn't the only creative kid. My best friend growing up was also a really good drawer. So, you know, that was something we would do together.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe there was a little bit of a competition going on too.
Probably, yes.
And so we'd sit around, draw pictures or make things. And we had, at one point, we made all these paper dolls. And they started out being, like, you know, good looking and you know, Barbie doll, paper dolls. But then they sort of started to go into, like, you know, we thought of, like, the weirdest characters we could probably think of. And, you know, I'm not really sure how politically correct they were, but I wish I had some of them now because it was such a hoot to look at.
Oh, I was just going to ask if they're stashed away in a box anywhere.
I don't think so.
Oh, that's so funny.
Yeah.
How old were you guys when you were doing that?
Like 11.
Yeah.
12. I don't know. So, yeah, I just grew up, everybody around me seemed to make things. Like my grandmother too, she was always knitting or crocheting or making a little craft.
Did you know how to knit and crochet too?
I can knit, and not very well. My mom's really good at it, but
yeah.
I'll want to do that because it's kind of meditative and you kind of get into a trance and there's just sort of that repetitive motion that's comforting.
Yeah.
So I'll knit a little bit. And then I'm like, yeah, okay, I'm good. And I put it away.
I know. I've made a lot of scarves.
Yeah.
So like one long rectangle. And then in university, my roommate knew how to crochet. And so she taught me and I was like, oh, I'm going to make a blanket for my bed. And then I stopped at one point when it was quite small. And I'm like, oh, it's a baby blanket. I'm going to stop right now. That was
perfect.
Right? Nobody knew that I, you know, it was supposed to be 5 times bigger than that. I don't even know where that is now. But yeah, it was fun, but I could never see it through.
Yeah, it hasn't turned out to be my thing.
No, but you paid them.
I appreciate it.
Yeah, no kidding. And then so did you go to art school? No, you didn't. I read this.
I didn't. Well, okay. I did go to Minot State University for 3 semesters, and I was enrolled as a fine arts student.
And where is that?
In Minot, North Dakota.
Okay.
So it's about an hour and a half from where I live.
Okay.
And, like, in high school, art, like, in my high school, they didn't even, you couldn't even take an art class until I was in grade 11.
How big was your high school if there's only 100 and something people in your town?
I went to Estevan, which is about 30-minute drive.
Okay.
So there was, like, I think 100 and some kids in my graduating class.
Okay, got it.
But yeah, so and then by that time I was already involved in the theater class. And of course you're encouraged to, you know, you don't take too many of these art classes.
Or right.
Theater classes. You just take one and then you make sure you get your chemistry and your physics and geotrig and all that stuff. And unfortunately I was actually pretty good at that. So I didn't just default to the art classes. I'm like, oh, yes, I'm definitely going to do something that has to do with chemistry in the end.
Mm-hmm.
Which, oh. But nobody ever, like, pulls you aside when they, you know, when you're filling out the tests of what you should be when you grow up. You know, I think the closest I got to something creative was, like, being a scientific illustrator. That was the one job that they came back. It was like, okay, if you must draw something, then this is what you should do.
Oh, my gosh.
But somehow I still had it in my head to go into fine arts. But and I did really well the first semester. And I had a drawing class I really liked. And, of course, you have to take all the other math and all that stuff you have to do. And I did well. I was on the honor roll. But then the second semester, I couldn't get into any art classes. They were all full. And then I fell in love for the first time.
Yeah.
And I just completely flunked out that second semester. I party. I had a lot of fun, but maybe it wasn't the best. But I went back for one more semester, and I just wasn't feeling it. The one professor that I really liked that taught drawing, at one point he pulled me aside and he said, you're really good, but what are you going to do with this? Like, are you planning to be a teacher? Because you really have to do something practical. And I was like, I don't want to be a teacher. So you're telling me that if I go through this, I'm just going to end up being a teacher? And there's nothing wrong with being a teacher. That's a wonderful career, but.
Yeah, it's not something you want to do, don't do it.
So I just really didn't feel any encouragement to just be an artist, whatever that was. So, I ended up quitting and working for a year. And I actually worked as a customs officer.
At your little border? Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Well,
yeah, I did. And then at a little teeny tiny border crossing east of North Portal. And I did a lot of evening and midnight shifts where I was sitting by myself.
Ooh, was that scary?
Well, there was one other officer there, but you're just sitting. You're just doing nothing. And so I would bring my drawing materials and I would draw at work. But
yeah, because I can't imagine how many border crossings you would have. How many people would go through in a shift?
Not very many.
No.
So I realized very quickly that that was not the career for me.
Yeah, I guess so. That sounds pretty crystallizing.
Yeah. So then I went to the Southern Alberta Institute of Technology for 2 years, and I completed the broadcast journalism program there in their cinema, television, stage, and radio department.
And what made you do that?
I don't know.
Your theater stuff?
Maybe, and yeah. It was something practical, but maybe a little bit creative, with the storytelling aspect of it.
And did you like it?
I did. I actually enjoyed the class, and that's where I found, I made a really good friend, and just felt really connected, and even though I didn't do a lot with it, I learned some really great skills, like writing skills, and how to tackle big projects in little increments, and how to tell a story.
Mm-hmm.
So it was good. After that, I went to Victoria and I worked at an all talk radio station.
Oh, wow.
AM 900. It didn't last very long, but.
What year was that?
96.
Oh, I left Victoria in 95.
Oh, we just missed each
just
other.
Just missed. Oh, that's so funny. And then how long were you in Victoria?
For a couple of years. And then I moved to Kelowna.
Oh.
Yeah, so I was there for a couple of years. And all the time, I was working, real jobs. But all the time I was still, painting and drawing and kind of dabbling and being really envious of other people I saw being artists because I just didn't know how to get there yet.
Yeah. Did you feel like you needed an art degree or did that even come into your mind?
Maybe a little bit, but not at that point, not so much. I've dealt more with that in the last few years where I've been why didn't I go to a different school to start with? And why didn't I do this? But I mean,
but you know, I don't, the reason I ask is because I don't actually think it matters. I think there are so many amazing artists that are self-taught. And I always find it so interesting, that people will beat themselves up over not having that degree. Because I don't know. I mean, mine made me stop making art for 15 years.
You know, that's true. And I think it's easier to say that when you do have it to say that you don't.
Yeah. I can see that. And there's that. I know. I think, and we also live in a world where you feel like you need a gold stamp to say you can do this now.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And you do if you want to be a doctor. I'd say go through school. For sure.
That would be nice.
Yeah, please don't operate on anybody. But I think, Yeah, I just wanted to ask that because I think that's kind of interesting because I know a lot of people listening, that kind of thing does hold them back because they don't feel like they have that, you know, the stamp that says you are an artist with a capital A. And I think that you can get it other ways. But yeah, it's hard. You feel there's that imposter thing or the fraud thing. But
oh, yeah, the imposter syndrome.
Yeah. Do you still feel that or no?
For sure. And I don't think it'll ever go away.
Yeah.
Like, because if you're trying to always set the bar a little higher for yourself, you always end up being in that headspace where you're just like, okay, I don't know what I'm doing here. So hopefully nobody else finds out that I really have no clue. I'll just think my way through it.
But so I think that's just the game. Because I know so many people who have MFAs who are like, oh yeah, you know, imposter syndrome. I'm like, wait, you have imposter syndrome? Like, how much money did you pay to get that imposter syndrome? You know, and but I think it's just human nature, you know. And yeah, every time you do challenge yourself and you put yourself in a spot where you feel uncomfortable, you're gonna feel it. But then you're gonna do the, you know, you'll end up doing it. You'll do the thing that freaks you out, and then you're not a fraud anymore. And then you sign yourself up for the next scary thing.
Yeah, and you hope so, because if you don't keep challenging yourself, then, you know, you're just going to bake that same cake and hopefully you don't get bored.
Yeah, exactly. So I think it's good. But yeah, I thought that was interesting. I just wanted to ask because you are such a good painter. And when I saw, like, I was just doing a tiny bit of research before I called, and I was looking just to see where you went to art school, and I'm like, cinema, television, stage, and radio. Hold the phone. Like, which is just goes to prove that you can paint so well without a BFA. So everyone out there without a BFA who's freaking out, don't worry. Just keep painting. Okay, so you're in Kelowna. You're working random things and still drawing. Go.
Still drawing, but it doesn't have any focus. I haven't really figured out the why. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, why do I want to do this? What do I have to say? But I ended up saving a bunch of money and quit my job and did the backpacking in Europe thing.
Awesome.
And I remember at that time when I said, okay, I'm quitting my job, I remember consciously thinking to myself, from this point forward, art's going to be a bigger priority in my life. I didn't really know what that was yet, but I remember making that switch in my head.
That's huge.
It is. And then I went to, you know, Europe, and you're like surrounded by old, wonderful things. And
yeah, masterpieces everywhere you turn.
Yeah. Except I do have a bone to pick with Paris right now.
Okay.
But when I was there, you know, you're like, okay, Paris, we're going to go to the Louvre. Like, it's going to be incredible. I can't wait. Like, this is it. It's like a big deal. And when we got there, went up to the pyramids, and like, there's all these people kind of milling around. I'm like, oh, this must be normal. But then I sensed that there was something wrong in the crowd, right?
Wow.
There's a lot of grumbling. So you get up to the front, and they had all a bunch of posters just stuck to the glass, right, in different languages. And then I found the one that was in English. And it was like, the Louvre is closed due to a strike.
Oh, yes.
So I didn't get to go to the Louvre at all.
Oh, no.
But I'm not bitter.
No, like, I can tell. I think it sounds like you've really gotten over it.
Yeah, no, it's okay. Like, my cousins, when they go, they always, like, they'll send me a little photo, like, at the Louvre again. And it's So, yeah.
Well, there's your perfect excuse to go back.
That's right. That's right. I'll get there.
Well, my parents used to live in Belgium, so it was a quick, jaunty train ride to Paris. And so I've been quite a few times. Sorry. But every time I've gone, so I've been to the Louvre, I've been to, you know, Pompidou and all these things. The Musée d'Orsay, is that the train station one, right?
Right.
Yeah. I have never been there because I think I've been to Paris 5 times. It was being renovated. Then they were on strike. Then they were on strike again. I've never been in there. So I feel the same way about that. So I knew that's where your story was going because there's random strikes all the time with those galleries.
Right.
So if you plan to go back, Google it. Make sure they're not putting those posters up.
Are they happy right now? I'll just make a few phone calls and make sure everybody's satisfied. And yeah.
Did you go to the Pompidou?
No, I think it affected more than one place. Like it was basically anything that was the government of France operated.
Oh, yeah, that would rule out a few. Yeah, that's not good. Okay, well, then you just need to go back for like a big birthday or a big anniversary or something.
Well, my husband and I were going to go for our honeymoon, and we were going to go. We got married in February, and we were going to go in the spring, and then I was pregnant. And I had really bad morning sickness, so didn't end up going then.
And you don't want wine and cheese when you are morning sick and pregnant. No, no, no. Okay, well, another time when your daughter's a bit older, perhaps, because she's 8 now, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe I can take her along.
Yeah, there you go. I was going to ask, because, you know, why not pry? It's a podcast. When you fell in love in your first year at university, was that your husband now, or did you fall in love with someone else?
No, there was a few in between.
Okay, I was just wondering, because I knew you were married. I was like, I wonder if that was the love that, like, you know, but no, first love messes things up, then you find the right one. Got it.
Yeah.
Okay, I have to ask, these are the things that, like, haunt me at night that I didn't ask afterwards. The gossip, it's my favorite part. Okay, so you decide you're going to go to Europe. You're angry in Paris.
Yes.
But you've decided art's going to be your focus.
Right. So then I moved back. Returned to Canada and, you know, didn't have a job. And so I decided to move back to North Portal at that point because it just felt like home.
Yeah.
And it was a good move. Saskatchewan's actually a really great place to be an artist. And as I sort of, you know, started to focus and work more and kind of figure out what I was doing, I was able to take advantage of a couple of really great programs that they have here. And one is these local adjudications that they have. It's run by the Organization of Saskatchewan Arts Councils.
Mm.
And so it's for people who don't consider themselves professional artists. You enter like 5 artworks, and then they bring in a professional artist to do the critiques.
Oh.
And then out of the show, they'll select 1 or 2 people to go on to a provincial level.
Wow, that's very cool.
Yeah, it is. So the first year I entered, you know, I didn't really know what I was doing yet, and I got some great feedback. And then the second year I did, and I was selected. So then I went on to a provincial level, and they had a critique again, and then they selected from all the ones around the province a traveling exhibition. So I got to be part of a group show. That was my first time, like, being part of a show. And it was called The Uncanny Landscape.
What kind of work did you put in that?
They were kind of abstracted landscapes. I made them with a wood burner on wood panels. So I was using the wood burner as a drawing tool and then staining the wood.
And, ooh, that sounds cool.
Yeah, I had 2 pieces that were selected. And then they were in the office, the head office in Regina. And then I got a phone call and they had been stolen. They had a break-in and they had stolen some of the artwork. And, well, I guess I was the lucky or unlucky person that had their artwork stolen. So,
well, that's a bit of a pat on the shoulder.
Yeah, I hope so. Like, I hope somebody ended up, like, hanging it on the wall. They didn't just go, whoops, I grabbed the wrong ones and threw it in the dumpster, you know, like, what's this? So, yeah.
That's actually pretty cool.
I've had work stolen, and so they let me put in, replacement pieces.
Wow, that's crazy. And so when you were entering that, were you feeling, because it was your second year, were you feeling sort of more confident, or were you still kind of nervous about being part of this, or did it all feel good?
It felt good, but I think it's because I was still so naive. I didn't really understand yet how this whole thing worked. And, as I said, I was able to kind of use some things that are in place in Saskatchewan to build myself up.
Yeah.
And they do a lot of workshops with Carfac, Saskatchewan. Another thing that I did is I applied for a mentorship. So So it's a year-long mentorship with an artist. They pair you up. And I was I got to be with Holly Fay. She's an artist out of Regina.
Okay.
She's amazing. And it was like the best thing that ever happened to me. Because I was making this work and I realized, okay, I might have a talent. But I still wasn't really figuring out the why I was making it or what the story was,
right,
what the motivation was. And so I was making these great big, like I was using full sheets of plywood and making these sort of abstracted kind of paintings or drawings of weeds.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of ran out of steam. I didn't really know where to go with it. But at the same time, I was also every day just doing like a little personal drawing just for me. They were just on these little pieces of paper. And I kind of developed this character that was based on myself. And she was sort of like this magician / hermit, kind of facing the world and all of the like things that were kind of bothering me or affecting me at the time. And I didn't really show them to anyone. And then about 3/4 of the way through the year, I decided to show them to Holly. And she looked at them and she laid them all out. And then she was quiet for a moment. And then she looked at me and she goes, "This is strong work. Like, this is the direction you need to be going."
Wow. And how did you feel about that?
Well, I was kind of shocked because it was something that came easily. You know, like you think it has to be like you have to suffer through it.
Yeah. And,
but
I always joke that you can't spell painting without pain.
Yeah. So then I kind of turned like, oh, so it's okay if I tell something personal or talk about some of these things that bother me. And I was just hitting 30 at that point. And like mental illness and depression runs in my family.
Mm-hmm.
So doing these little drawings was a way for me to kind of explore, like I was always kind of scared that it was going to happen to me.
Mm-hmm.
I always had my eye out to like, oh, am I going to fall into a depression? Oh, I feel a little tired and down today. Like,
yeah.
You know, and so I just was able to explore some of those thoughts and feelings through drawing, and people, it struck a nerve with them. It somehow communicated. It went beyond just me. I didn't realize what I was doing would go beyond me. And then some drawings that I had done about, you know, connections to my mom and connections to mental health, they were picked up in a group show that was like a survey of Saskatchewan artists called Mind the Gap.
Mm-hmm.
So that toured Saskatchewan, and then it was exhibited in Ottawa too. And I got to be in company with a lot of great Saskatchewan artists. So that was it timed out so well.
Yeah. Well, you know, and I think it's interesting that you showed her those sketches. Like, you know, you could have, I mean, you were 3/4 through the year with her. You could have just never shown them. It's just interesting that you had the instinct to show her.
Well, and, you know, this goes to Holly's credit. She was really good at offering feedback. She was safe.
Yeah.
I felt comfortable. Like, I think that's part of it. You have to find some people that you trust.
Yeah.
So you don't end up with that big stinker, like somebody saying something that, you know, throws you off for years and years.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not and that you'd know anything about that.
No, I don't know anything about that. I don't know what you're talking about. I just had a consultation. There's a woman in Vancouver named Penny Lane Shen, and she is amazing. And she'll come and do consultations with artists. And a bunch of my friends have worked with her, and she'll just come to your studio for an hour and a half and, you know, look through your stuff and talk to you and sort of help you focus in on what you really should be doing, because usually people are doing way more than they need to, or they're kind of all over the place, and she'll just sort of focus you in. Well, I have avoided her for like a year and a half. It's like, I just don't write her back. And like, she's friends of friends. We went out for dinner with a bunch of people. I sat at the other end of the table from her so that I wouldn't have to have that conversation. I was doing a really good job of dodging her. And, because I didn't know her, right? And I was scared. I didn't want to talk about this stuff yet. And so anyway, she was going to be in the Okanagan meeting with some other people, that clients she has here, and she basically just emailed and said, "I'm coming to your house."
Yeah. And I was no like, choice.
Yeah, and I was like, "Oh God, okay." And I was like trying to think of all the day of. I was like, "Oh, Charlie, are you feeling sick? Do you think maybe you know, Mommy shouldn't have anybody over?" No, he's good. And so anyway, she came. She was supposed to be here for an hour and a half. She was here for 3 hours, and it was life-changing. And within the first half an hour, I felt so comfortable with her. And we talked about all the stuff, and I pulled out all these things new and old and whatever. And I came out of there feeling so excited. And this is like 2 weeks ago, just so excited and focused and good to go again, you know?
Right.
It was amazing.
And sometimes they just validate some things that are going on.
Yes.
Like that you're just unsure of. And they can also, the best thing about it is they can offer you a place to go.
Yeah.
Like sometimes you get stuck and you're just like, I'm not sure what the next move is or what do I do now? And then they can.
Yeah. Like you see the nugget and then you're just like, I don't know what. And it's like that with anything, I think, you know, like relationships or whatever, you know, if a friend comes and complains about a boyfriend, you can be like, well, you know what you should say to him? You should say this, this, and this. And, but when it's your own world, you're like, I don't know what to do. So it's nice to have these mentors and these people that can kind of come and help guide you a little bit. That's amazing that you had that. So was that still in your early, like around 30?
Yes.
Okay. Yep. Okay. And so did you just abandon the wood and the abstract stuff at that point?
At that point.
Yeah.
But if you look back and see how I treat line,
yeah.
I think it's still there. So I think I was, you know, building some drawing skills or kind of, I don't know. There's always a thread that connects them.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So okay. Well, then what happened?
Well, then, I met my husband,
mm-hmm.
and at the time I was working at the SFN Art Gallery as the art educator. Mm. And, I have to say, like, having a creative job is really great, but at the same time, you don't have a lot of energy for your own artwork.
Yeah.
So it kind of suffered a little bit. I wasn't pushing it as much as I could, but I met my husband, we got married, and then, you know, not like 10 months after we married, Natalie was born. And I remember talking to an artist friend who was saying, well, you know, you're going to have a kid, so you can kiss your art life goodbye for at least 5 years, if not longer. And
yeesh.
I kind of had that thought too. It's like, okay, I'm going to have to put this aside for now and not to, you know, I won't be able to make artwork during this time. And I had Natalie in like 4 months after she was born. I'm like, this baby sleeps quite a bit. Like there's a good solid morning nap and afternoon nap. So I could work on my stuff in the morning and then still have an afternoon nap when she sleeps in the afternoon. So at that time I was like, okay, I need a fresh start though. I'm not really sure what I'm doing. So I went to the studio. I had a studio in my old elementary school because
oh.
It closed because there wasn't enough population to support it. So I got to, a friend of mine, we shared a studio in a classroom.
That's so cool.
Yeah, it was special to be able to work in that space where I'd grown up.
Yeah, it probably smelled like childhood and like
yeah,
all those memories. That's so cool. Okay, yeah, go on. I have
but
more questions
like,
about that, but that's cool.
It was about a block away. But when you have a little one and it's minus 30, it,
right.
You know, might as well be 100 miles. But I decided, okay, I need three things I'm going to make work with. Just pick something that's just speaking to you. So I got paper and my, like my dip pens that I like to use and some charcoal. And then also grabbed these, images from Victorian magazines that my husband and I found this, pile of old Victorian newspapers and magazines in this old barn outside of North Portal. And we found letters and things belonging to this woman. Her name was Emily Holmes Orr.
Oh.
I don't know. So there's like, oh, just all this stuff. So I took the images home and started collaging, like taking the women out of context and then drawing in an alternate scene around them. And it kind of, the women kind of morphed into trees and sort of had like, if you're familiar with the story of Daphne,
no.
Apollo was chasing her, and her father, in order to save her, transformed her into a tree.
Okay.
Which I think is like, oh, thanks, Dad.
Yeah, thanks. Like, this is not actually better, but anyway.
Yeah. So I kind of use this woman like as the idea of being rooted or set in your ways or kind of being stuck in a way of behaving or interacting with others. And I just kind of made all these little, they were kind of funny, and I put little text lines in the drawings. I just was making them like every day. I just sit down every morning during nap time. I would just sit down, make the drawings. As soon as Natalie woke up, I put the stuff away. And I got enough of these drawings that I was like, okay, I'm not really sure what to do with them. And then I met another artist by the name of Martha Cole. She's from Disley, Saskatchewan, and she's a wonderful textile artist. But she also makes artist books. And
what does that mean?
An artist book is, you know, the book itself is an art piece. So quite often they're made by hand. Mm-hmm. They might be bound by hand, or sometimes it'll be like a limited edition of so many books.
And the work in it, is it that artist's work, or is it like, would you do one with your work?
Yeah, it's like a concept, though. It's more than it's more than just like, oh, here's a catalog of my paintings.
Oh,
the artwork
I see.
Itself is the book.
Got it.
So, for example, one of the books I ended up making with Martha's help was using these drawings that I'd made, and they could have these Victorian women morphing into trees, and then she's interacting with this sort of beast character. I'm not doing a very good job of explaining what these drawings are, but they ended up going into a Victorian album that we made. So it's, you know, how the big photo albums would be like have a cloth cover and usually like an embossed design on the top of it. So we ended up making one of these by hand.
Wow.
It was quite a process. And I went and stayed a week with Martha at her home in Disley, which is a converted church.
Oh my gosh.
Absolutely amazing. And then she has a studio that she's built outside.
That sounds
so
amazing.
Wonderful. Yeah.
How old was Natalie at the time?
Natalie would have been just over a year.
Okay. How did you feel being away? Thrilled / anxious?
I knew she was okay because my husband and my family, they're amazing.
Yeah.
And so supportive. And Mike was so much better with babies than I, like, baby person. And when Natalie was first born, he had no problem. Oh, yeah, I'll change that diaper. And he's just in there where I'm still like, she's so little. I don't know what to do. So I knew she was in good hands, and I was able to just focus. But near the end of the week, I was definitely ready to go home, and I was stressing because I needed to get this book done. And Mike's getting to the point where he's been single parenting for a week, so he was ready for me to return.
Yeah.
It was so worth it.
Yeah. Sounds amazing.
So, yes, I'll never be able to repay Martha for her help. But hopefully someday I can pay it forward.
Yeah, I'm sure. I bet you will. Well, you know what I think is so interesting actually about the content in that book is it's kind of funny with like the drawings that you were doing with your friend when you were 11. You know, like the characters that you were making and stuff, and you're still doing it.
Yeah, you're right. I've never thought of that.
It's kind of cool. And like, yeah, anyway, I just thought that was an interesting, like, you know, little connection. But okay, so now you've got this beautiful book. Did you guys finish it?
Yes, we finished it. I actually made two. There was two.
Wow.
So I made like an edition of two, these big albums, and then there was like another one that was like a scrapbook, and it had some of the drawings and other sort of artifacts that I had found put in there. And then I made a series of like cabinet cards called Millinery Miscellany, and it's these women wearing all these very fantastic hats. And then they were part of an exhibit in Estevan at the art gallery. It was a solo exhibit with, you know, I had some drawings in like those old Victorian frames that have the convex glass.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so I was, I made some drawings in there, and I kind of set up the exhibit like a Victorian parlor.
Oh, that's cool.
So that was fun. And that was kind of branching out of just, you know, that was new territory where you're not just making artwork to hang on the wall where it's a little different.
Yeah.
Like it's stepping out of that into like an installation.
That's so cool. It's really, I love that when artists do that, when they just sort of take over a space.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not just things framed on the wall. And yeah, I really want to try that with my work. I don't know what that will look like yet, but I keep thinking about it because there's something really cool about that.
Yeah, if you just, yeah, you just, and it's almost like you need to see the space and just kind of make it at the time.
Yeah, yeah.
Like I have a hard time pre-visioning what the installation would look like. It's almost like I have to go there and then sort of MacGyver it at that point. But I mean, most curators aren't really into that. Like they want to know what you're going to do.
You can't just show up with a shoelace and some gum and a and a paperclip and make it happen.
I don't know, maybe you could.
Yeah. You could, like, probably, actually.
If you did a performance, like if you were going to do some collage work, like just, you know, have people bring you things. And
oh
then
my gosh, that's cool. Yeah. Oh, I might steal that.
Yeah, and just let the stories grow from what people supply you with.
That is brilliant. I got to write that down. Okay. Well, there, you just paid it forward.
Okay, good, great.
Done. Check. okay, I've kept you on here for so long. I need to know how and when your doily pieces started, because your drawings are all really beautiful, but I'm obsessed with those doilies. So let's talk about how that showed up.
Okay. So I was invited to participate in a group show by Jenny Western. She's out of Winnipeg. Wonderful person. And it was based on the kind of the DIY movement and handcrafted things and kind of how, you know, corporations have sort of adopted like, oh, this is handcrafted, but maybe it's really not.
Right.
It was pretty open as far as what we wanted to do with that. And the narrative drawings just weren't working. Like I just wasn't coming up with anything. And I just decided to just experiment. And in the drawings, I often have like this sort of, these items sort of strewn around that are part of the drawings. And I thought, well, what if I focus on one of these things? So I had a collection of doilies and decided that I would just try drawing one just to see how hard it was. And yeah, just for fun.
Yeah, yeah, that does sound like a lot of fun.
And I like to use a dip pen, like a steel nib pen.
Yeah.
And I just used some white acrylic ink that I had, and it just turned out. Like the first one I did, I'm like, this actually worked. And then I added the shadows. I'm like, oh.
It's the shadows.
Yeah. It just popped.
Yeah, that's what makes it look like a photograph.
So I just said, okay, one worked. Let's try another one. Let's try another one. And, you know, at first I started drawing ones that were all like the beautiful ones that are all perfect. And mm-hmm. then I realized that, you know, that's nice, but they were kind of boring. Like they need to have the holes and the stains and the threads that are coming loose, because then that becomes the story of these doilies.
Yeah. Their life.
And I thought, oh, go ahead.
It's their life, the life that the tea that's spilled on them and all the mm-hmm. things they've been through.
And around that time I had turned 40, and I mean, 40's not old, but it's not really young.
Yeah, it's that moment. It's that moment when you're like, oh, okay.
Yeah, so it kind of like fit, like just kind of, I was having, like, I wanted to say that I was like, oh, I don't care that I'm getting older. This is great. But I mean, that would be a lie.
Yeah, I felt exactly the same way. I felt exactly the same way because up until, well, even now I'm 44 and people ask how old I am. And my instinct is to say like, 27.
27's the greatest.
Yeah, right? Yeah, or 32. I really like 32 as well. And so that's how old I think I am. And I'm like, hold the phone. I'm creeping up on 45. Like, when did that happen?
I can't believe it.
I know. So I totally know what you mean. And, you know, and it's true, like, we're privileged that we get to be growing older, and there is so much wisdom that comes with age and all that stuff. But then at the end of the day, you're like, oh God, like, yeah, it's a big milestone, 40.
Yeah. In society, it doesn't really, like, the culture that we live in right now doesn't really celebrate the older woman.
No.
And you start looking at TV commercials and realizing that all the people in the commercials are 20 years younger than you, and you don't see your face reflected back.
Yeah, it's true.
All that often. So I just wanted to kind of honor aging and the processes that affect how you look or feel when you reach a certain age.
Mm-hmm.
So as I started working with the doilies more, I started using pins to sort of stretch them out and tying them with thread and maybe having utensils and things pulling at them and causing this stress. So they were still beautiful, and they were all the more interesting because they had all these things happening to them.
Yeah.
And then that light, that harsh light, with the shadows, just kind of, it just all seemed to work.
It does. When you were saying earlier that you were like, you were always making, but you didn't know why, like, what, you know, what was your purpose and what were you trying to say? And it's just like, you know, your artist statement for the TDM series, and it makes me tear up. Like, it is so, I will put it in the post because it is just so powerful and beautiful. And I think, like, you found it, like, you nailed it. The way that you've visually articulate this perfectly connects with what you're trying to say.
Oh, well, thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. It's there's something about that magical moment. So many artists have talked about it, where they find the thing where it's not hard. You know what I mean? Like, where the pieces kind of come together and it's just like, oh, there we go.
Yeah. Yeah. It really got, and like the positive feedback too. Like,
yeah,
I realized that it was communicating something.
Yeah. And are you still doing them now?
Well, I had two exhibits, well, three, including the group show. And then I had a solo exhibit in Saskatoon and then one in Minot. And, you know, that was after 30 some paintings. And I kind of got to a point where I needed to just put it aside.
Well, that's what I was wondering, and it's hilarious that it's titled Tedium, because I was like, she's going to get, your portfolio is filled with these amazing things, and I was like, oh no, one day she's going to get to a point where she's just like, oh my God, I can't do doilies anymore.
Well, yeah, I mean, you do tire of it, but I always try to leave before I get completely tired, because
yeah,
I like to go back and maybe pick up the thread again.
Mm-hmm.
So after I did these works and it felt good, and then I needed a break, but I still had all these doilies hanging around, like piles and piles, because I ask people for things and then they find out that I want them and then they deliver them to my door in garbage bags.
Right.
So
you should ask for money.
I know. I should.
Yeah, just see what happens.
They just aren't, you know, they don't have money just laying around and tucked away in drawers.
Oh, true. But they do have doilies, yeah.
Yes. And nobody knows what to do with doilies. People tend to know what to do with money.
True. True.
So I kind of wandered into a different realm. And as I was moving all these doilies around my studio, trying to tidy up and make sense of them, and there were some I had to return to their owners, and I'm trying to sort them out, and I've got them in a big pile, and I'm kind of, you know, going through them, and I'm like, it's actually really beautiful just to look at all these doilies as I'm pulling one after another off the pile, and another one would appear, and I just, like, this is really beautiful. I wonder if anybody else thinks so. So I made a little video of me just kind of going through this pile of doilies, and then Jenny Western again pipes up on Instagram and says, in big capital letters, this needs to be a video work. I'm like, oh, I think you're right.
Oh my gosh. When was this?
This was in April, like spring, so April.
Okay, of this year.
Of this year.
Yeah.
So I'm like, yeah, there's something about it, just looking at these pieces. So then I kind of played around with unfolding them, and I have all this other stuff like needlework and stuff, and I don't know. And then I thought, well, what if I did stop motion? And I had done a little bit of stop motion when I was drawing the doilies, where I actually videoed myself. Like I would draw a little loop, take a picture, draw a little loop.
Okay, yeah.
And so I'm like, well, let's try that. So I just sort of did an experiment with moving the doilies around in circles and making them spin. And it was like, oh, yeah, that's good. And then I posted it on Instagram, and Jenny Western pipes up again. She goes, now get this into distribution. I'm like, okay. And she's tagging Video Pool, and she just made things happen for me. So I did get an email from Video Pool, which is a cooperative, and they do distribution of films and video work.
Oh.
Yeah, a whole totally different world. I didn't really know much about it. And she said, yes. And I got an email from them saying, yes, we'd be interested in, you know, distributing this work. I'm like, it's not even a work yet. Like, I have to still have to make some sort of completed video. So then I spent like 2 months just turning doilies around slowly in a darkened room and taking pictures of them until I had a 3-minute video called Table Dance. And it's set to the music of the Emeralds. I don't know if you're familiar with the Emeralds.
No.
But if you've ever danced, like the bird dance or the chicken dance,
yeah,
you probably danced to the Emeralds. So they have this little waltz tune that I like. So I emailed them and asked them if I could use their song.
Wow.
Set it to. So.
And so when did you finish all of this?
In May.
Oh, okay.
So for 2 months, I just obsessed about stop motion.
Yeah. Well, you did go to school for cinema, television, stage, and radio.
See, it's all coming together.
That's right.
I knew there was a reason. So, and then that happened very quickly. I sent it off to the finished product to Video Pool in May. And then it was like, it's been screened 3 times. It was in Serbia, Festival of Moving Image in Winnipeg. It was part of a show called Quickening, and it was by Experimental Animations by Mothers, and that was in Chicago.
Oh, my word.
It just, like, went crazy.
So is this your new future?
I must say I am intrigued by the video work, so I could definitely see where it's going to be interwoven.
Wow, that, I had no idea. Is this on your site?
I think there's a link to the little trailer.
Okay.
But it's on Vimeo. I can give you the link, and
okay,
I'll let you put that on the.
That would be awesome, or like wherever, whatever you're allowed to show.
Oh, no,
and link
it's
to.
Fine. No. It's,
yeah,
it's,
that is so cool. I had no idea. Well, so are you still drawing? And because they're drawings, right? They're not technically paintings because you're using a dip pen, right?
Yeah.
So, see, I always thought they were paintings.
Well, they are paint. I use paint, so I'll use the high golden paint.
Oh, okay.
And so it comes out of the pen like an ink, and I like ink. But some of the objects, like the spoons and things that you see in the paintings, I have to use a brush. But I use a really small brush, so they are, you know, they are very much like, I would consider them, they're hybrids.
Yeah, yeah.
Painting drawings.
Well, now you've got video in there. My gosh, it's like. Got to get some ceramics. You'll have the whole thing covered.
I know. I got to get some focus.
Really. Yeah. No, you don't. Oh, it's amazing.
Problem here, but
no, doilies can be your focus.
It did lead one to the other. Like
yeah.
Just having all the doilies, painting with them, working with them. It was just, and also like at the end of that video, I have a picture of my grandma and me.
Oh.
So it really does tie it back to just celebrating.
Yeah. That's so nice. Well, this is leading right into, I'm going to partially talk about this because it's still kind of secret, but not really. Okay, so my last question for you was, you're in a small town. How are you showing in all these places? You've explained all that. Is there a dream city that you would want to show in?
it would be really great to be in a major city. Like, I've just never, you know, I've been mostly in Saskatchewan and kind of branched out into Canada and a little bit. I just getting out there farther is good.
Okay, so I am curating a show in LA, spring 2019. So it's quite a long ways away. But I pitched you in my list of people. And the gallery loved you. I haven't emailed you about this yet.
No, and I'm...
But if you are in, you are so in. And it's all about... I'm not going to give away the title or anything yet because we're still figuring it all out. But it's basically exactly what you do. And now that I know about the video, so I'm even more pumped. And I would be so honored if I was the person that got to lead you to a big city. And I'll just drop you off there. And who knows what will happen after that. Oh, no.
I'm doing the big dramatic.
Oh, I was like, are you going to be...
This one's for real. Like, seriously?
Are you in?
Wow. I'm like, I don't know. What? Like, really? That is, I'm just like flabbergasted.
It's going to be such a beautiful show. I've been wanting to do this show for the longest time. And I already had all these people in mind, and this gallery messaged me and said, we love what you do. Will you curate this, curate whatever you want? So I was trying to be really reasonable. Like, I've curated enough now that I know that shipping is expensive. And so if it's a show in New York, I try and pick lots of New York artists so that, you know, there's not tons of shipping costs and everything so that the gallery doesn't kill me. And, so I did the first round and I basically picked all LA artists, and he wrote back and he's like, oh, this is great. It's a great lineup. But don't worry about local, do whatever you want. If you could put any show together, what would you do? And I was like, oh, okay. you asked. And so I said, this is what I would call it. This is who I want, blah, 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 blah. And you were one of the people. And he wrote back and said, done. We've got a show.
Oh my goodness.
So I will, this is totally weird that I'm telling you this on the podcast, I wanted your genuine reaction.
I don't I don't know what I'm like, well, yes.
You don't have to say it. It's a really good gallery, but, and it's a long way away. So you have a ton of, you've got a year and a half to get ready, but, I will send you an email about it. And you can say no, if you know, you don't want to, but I just think you would be such an amazing, person to have in the show, because there's another person who works on actual doilies, and I think it's gonna be amazing.
Yeah, you're amazing.
I just collect people all together and go, there we go. But I just, it gets so I get so excited when it's like solving a puzzle, you know, when you get the right people in the right space, and you can just make magic, and it's very exciting to me. And so yeah.
You realize when I get off this phone, this interview, I'm just going to freak out, right? I'm going to totally freak out. I'm just trying to oh yeah, that's another show. That sounds really great. I got it.
It's going to be so good. anyway, it's not very nice of me to do it this way, but I just couldn't wait to tell you. And I was like, I'm not going to email it, because, you know, then you'll write back a civilized email. Yes, that sounds great. Send me some more details. This is so much more fun to kind of shock you.
Well, yeah, and it's you're my, the fairy art mother. You're just making dreams come true. It's I'm on the artist makeover show or something.
Yeah, that's a whole crew is going to come into your studio right now. Hey! No, that's actually not going to happen. But anyway, I'm thrilled, and we'll talk about it more, but I just wanted to put it out there. And because, I think that there's something, and I'm plugging myself again, but I'm writing a new book right now all about women artists, and I have a section about exactly this, that when women do work that's about these sort of, you know, woman type objects, that sometimes it can not be taken seriously. It's like, oh, it's just another form of craft, or oh, you know, whatever. And it's just like, no, it's not. And that's why I love your artist statement so much, and all the thought that's gone into it, and that you don't just paint the pretty ones, that, you know, you're celebrating age and growing older, and everything that goes with it. It's so rich and important. And I think especially right now, there's so many conversations going on about women and And yeah, like seeing older women in commercials or, you know, all these different things. And so I think it's just very timely, and which is why I wanted you to come on the podcast, which is why I want you in this show.
Yay!
Yay! And also, oh, rah, rah, Canada. I just really, as we've been chatting, I just had Sean William Randall on last week, who's also from Saskatchewan. And the week before that, I had Mariko Patterson, who's in Nova Scotia. And I was like, wow, this is just like the Canadian lineup.
That's okay.
Yeah. Go Canada. okay. I have had you on here for so long. Let's do the not so speedy speed round, and then I will set you free.
Okay.
Okay. If you could have anything for dinner tonight, because it's dinner time for both of us right now, what would it be? Anything.
Well, I love anything I don't have to cook myself.
Me too.
But I could really get into some sushi, I think.
Okay. Do you get a lot of sushi down there?
Not a lot. We have learned to make it ourselves.
Oh, classy.
And it's my daughter's favorite food.
Yeah, Charlie loves it too.
So okay. That would be a great family meal.
Okay, that's a good one. Okay, well, here we go. Here's the Halloween question. Best or worst Halloween costume you've ever worn, but it sounds like with your mom, it's going to be best Halloween costume you've ever worn.
The best Halloween costume. Oh, I've had some good ones.
All as, like, kid ones, or did you have, like, do you still do it up as an adult?
Oh, friends of ours throw a big Halloween party every year.
Yeah.
So we always dress up.
Yeah, you got to bring it to those adult parties, I find. Like, people mm-hmm. get pretty creative, yeah.
You should have seen the costume my husband made last year. He was like this cyborg, and he made it all out of foam. It was like this big armor thing. It was the best. But I didn't wear it, so I guess that doesn't count.
That doesn't count.
It's hard to pick, but if I was to say, like, a cute one that my husband and I did a couple of years ago was, he was a prospector and I was a saloon girl.
Oh, that's cute. Did you make your outfit? Please tell me no.
No, I bought pieces.
Okay.
Bought things here and there.
What's the best one your mom ever made?
Well, she did this cool thing once where I was a cat one year.
Mm-hmm.
So I had this full cat costume and it was black and white. And then the next year I said, I'd like to be a skunk. So all she had to do was, like, alter that black and white cat costume into a skunk costume, add the big tail.
She probably thought you were the best kid ever.
She's like, easy.
Yeah, done. That's so funny. Yeah, I one of my favorites was cat-related as well. When I was two, I was a leopard. And it was apparently, this is slightly horrific, but apparently they were leopard pajamas of my dad's. Not that I ever want to think about my dad wearing leopard pajamas, but anyway, apparently he did. And my mom cut them all up and made this like little leopard suit for me with a little leopard beret and then like a black Lone Ranger mask. And so apparently our neighbor came outside, Roger, who's a grown up, and I was there too in my leopard outfit, and he was like, ah, a leopard. And this is still a line my family uses. And I was like, no, Roger, it's me, Danielle. Because I was so sure. He was like, oh gosh, he really thinks it's a leopard because this costume is so baller that why wouldn't anybody believe that it's a real leopard? So now that's the big joke in our family. No, Roger, it's me, Danielle. So now I have an excuse to put the leopard costume in the post. Do you have a picture of you in your cat or skunk outfit?
I might. I'll have to go and raise my parents.
If you do, I'll put our cat photos side by side.
Okay.
Okay. Roller skates or ice skates?
Oh, ice skates.
Okay. That's what I figured.
Yeah.
Saskatchewan.
There was this, a skating rink right across the road from my house growing up.
Mm-hmm.
And North Portal does not have paved streets. And
oh.
There's no roller rink close by. So.
Is it an outdoor rink or an indoor rink?
It is now. At the time, it was indoor. But
and they didn't do roller skating in the summer?
It had a gravel base. Like, oh. It was kind of indoor. Like, it didn't have artificial ice. It had real ice.
Mm-hmm.
But it did have, like, the Quonset cover. But anyway.
Okay, that's fair enough. Our small town one had, it was an indoor rink, but in the summer, oh, man, they would melt the ice, and it would be roller skating in the 80s. There was a lot of aha, a lot of tears for fears. There was a lot of, now it's time for the girls to ask the boys. Now it's backwards skating time.
I remember dancing to Dirty Laundry. That was one. And Betty Davis Eyes. I think we did we'd have a carnival and do little routines and stuff.
So good. It's just all so good. I love that you're my age. It's like all you made the MacGyver joke. I was like, we're dating ourselves, but it's hilarious. Okay, and then the final one. When and if you read your horoscope, do you secretly believe it?
Only when it says something good.
Yeah.
Like, otherwise, it's like, no.
No. Oh, it's so generic. But if it's good, you're like, oh my gosh, I think that's right. Yeah, that's
sure.
Totally me too. Okay, just checking. That's all the stuff.
That was pretty easy.
That was easy, and that was so fun. Aside from a few technical difficulties, which we're going to make Greg deal with when he stitches our conversation together.
He can work the magic.
Yeah, that's right. And then we'll keep your dramatic pause in there. I thought I lost you again, but no, just a little drama, which I love.
I was just falling off my chair in in disbelief.
I love it. That's the kind of silence on a podcast I'm into. And that is it. So I'm going to put all of this in a big giant post and links to all the stuff. And I cannot wait. I'm going to go look at your video right now. And then everybody can see all the amazing things that you do.
Thank you so much. And thanks for all the work that you do. I must say that being featured on your blog made a huge difference for me. Like, a lot of good things came out of it, and the work that you do is so necessary.
Thank you. Yeah, you know, people have asked lately, like, oh, you know, do you think, like, when do you think you'll stop at 10 years at this? I'm like, never. Like, I can't imagine not having Jaws Curator be part of my day. So, I don't know.
That's great, because not many, you know, a lot of bloggers don't make it that long. Like, because it is something you have to do every day and be dedicated. So.
Yeah, it's just like a weird obsession now. Like I need to do it. So I'm happy that it has an impact. So that makes me super happy. Thank you. I guess I'll do it again tomorrow.
Awesome. I'll be reading.
Okay, good. Okay, well, I will let you know when this goes up, and I will email you about LA, and I will talk to you very, very soon.
So exciting. Thank
you. Yay. Okay, I'll talk to you soon.
Bye.
How fun was that? And now I need to make it a goal to golf that ninth hole in North Portal, right into the United States. And I don't even golf. That's how cool I think that sounds. Thank you so much to Lindsay for answering all of my questions, even the prying ones. Thank you to Saatchi Art for supporting this episode. And of course, great big thanks to you for listening. I am on my way to the University of Wisconsin for the entire week. They have invited me to be a visiting professor. So obviously, I've been desperately searching for a corduroy jacket with elbow patches. No luck. I guess they're going to have to just take me in jeans and an art apron. Anyway, all of this to say, there will not be a podcast this coming weekend. So have a happy Halloween. Please be inspired by me and Lindsay in our cat costumes. And I will be back in action the following Saturday, November 4th, with more Art for Your Ear. See you then.